At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
Hi, I'm Kristen McGlory, lifelong genius hunter. For a decade, I've been unearthing the recipes that have changed the way we cook. Now, on the Genius Recipe Tapes, we go behind the scenes with the geniuses themselves. And we get to hear from you. This week, I'm talking with Andrea Aliceta, a writer, recipe developer, and poet who, in her words, revels in exploring her Mexican roots through food, nostalgia, and history, all through a vegan lens, which is a lifestyle choice that some might see as at odds with Mexican cuisine and culture, but Andrea's work clearly proves otherwise. We will hear more on this from Andrea later in the show. As Andrea was working on a writing assignment for Epicurious earlier this year, she started digging into what she considered the one family recipe that she had inherited, the creamiest, most complex, most drunk with umami concoction, and yet it's completely vegan and surprisingly simple to make. A salsa that had been passed down through four generations. Every cook in Andrea's family started this recipe in basically the same way, with big chunks of onion, garlic, and serrano chilies, fried in a good amount of oil, then blended up with some of the savory, spicy oil that they fried in. But then, as it turns out, each of them went their own way. You can put it on everything, from tacos to scrambles to sandwiches. At the end of the episode, Andrea has one more surprise for us, too, so stick around for that. But for now, here she is to tell us more about the first time that her mom made this family salsa for her.
I was just, like, blown away at the flavors and how it came together. And I remember, like, she showed it to me, and I was, and she was like, "You'll never guess the secret ingredient. You're never going to guess." And I was like, "What?" And so I tasted it, and she was like, "It's peanut butter." And I was like, "Oh, damn." Like, I don't know. I was like, "Wow." Like, then I don't know. It just tasted amazing to me. I think at first, for my mom, she was making it seem like, no, this is like your great grandma's recipe. Like, this is how it was. Like, always had the peanut butter. Like, that's what makes it so unique. Yada, yada. But yeah, once I talked to my great aunt, she was like, "No, this is the recipe." And then I kept asking about the peanut butter, and she was like, "There's no peanut butter. Like, what are you talking about?" So that was pretty funny. And then yeah, it was like after, like, I had to talk to my mom again and be like, "Okay, what's up with the peanut butter? Like, who added the peanut butter in there?" And then that's when finally she was like, "Oh, I added the peanut butter." I was like, "You should have told me." But I wonder, maybe she like had adapted it and added it like so long ago that maybe she kind of just always like associated it with like, "Oh, this is that salsa." I have her little notebook actually where she wrote it down.
So that's how your mom shared the recipe with you. Did she have the version she had written down initially when your great grandma taught her?
I don't know if it's the exact one. I can grab it right now. I have it.
Thanks.
Okay. This is a little notebook. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. So it says chile serrano, onion, garlic, olive oil, little bit of bouillon. Yeah, there is no peanut butter.
Yeah, there's no peanut butter on this.
Yeah, so she definitely added the peanut butter.
That's hilarious. But peanut butter isn't the only genius secret to this recipe. It might be key to Andrea's mom's version and now hers, but the rest of its backbone comes from great-grandma Guillermina.
Would you mind describing how it is that it's made and what you think the keys are to making it so delicious?
Oh, yeah. So some of the key things I would say are infusing the flavor of like the vegetables you're working with into the oil, and like thinking of it that way versus thinking of it as like you're like cooking them down or frying them, or because you are using a lot of oil. And then also another key point would be the blending process. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that the salsa doesn't break. And I mean, I feel like it tends to either way, but just by blending it and pouring in the oil slowly as you blend it, I feel like that kind of just like emulsifies it a lot better, keeps it from breaking. It just makes it look really nice and velvety, mm-hmm. and smooth, and gives it like a really lovely texture. So I feel like those two things are pretty key. Also, you don't want to like overcook the chiles in particular when you're infusing the oil with the vegetables, because if you overcook chiles, they can get kind of bitter.
Mm-hmm. How do you think each person who has made this salsa in your family would serve it or did serve it?
Well, when I talked to my great aunt, she said that they served it kind of like with meaty dishes, like with like carne asada, or yeah, just kind of like maybe like red meats. Mm-hmm. And my mom she loves dipping it with bread. Mm-hmm. With like mm-hmm. I don't know, like a French bread, like a baguette, or slices of toasted sourdough bread, things like that. And she kind of likes enjoying it that way, and it's really, really good like that as well. And kind of just also like maybe like on meaty dishes. My mom and her husband love to go fishing a lot, so they probably like put it over their fish and over like rice and beans and things. Mm-hmm. I love to have it with like so many things. Like because I'm vegan, if we make like tofu scramble, like put it on top of the tofu scramble, or if we're making a mm-hmm. sandwich, put it in the sandwich. Like putting it in a torta, like, oh my god, so good. with like quesadillas, with tetelas, I'm sure like tamales, any Mexican meal that starts with or dish that starts with a T. Tetelas, tlayudas, tostadas. I feel like it would go great with all those things. It's just so savory, and I feel like it has such like umami that it kind of it goes really well with like heartier, like warm dishes.
And if you were making it with your mom now, how do you think you would settle how much of the seeds to leave in?
Well, my mom is stubborn in general, so she would be like, no. Like we actually, when I was like testing at some point, I was like, all right, you make it like how you make it, and I'll make it how I make it. And she was like, okay. And so she left all the seeds intact on all of the chiles, and made it really spicy. So she definitely will not settle for anything less than extremely spicy. And I just can't. So I probably would have to just make my own salsa. but like that, like if she had made, for example, if she had like made me like something like that and like took it home, or if I, for whatever reason, like made it that spicy, I would probably just like do like little dots like on each bite or something, versus kind of like being a little more generous with my serving of the salsa. So I don't think she would be taking out the seeds anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, but I also feel like she probably thinks like my salsa is just not spicy enough. So hers is better.
We'll just leave it at that. Hers is better.
Hers is better. Yeah. You'll sweat a little bit, but yeah. But she likes hers better. Like even like we had like her husband taste test, and he was like, you know, maybe sometimes you should make it like this. You should make it less spicy. And she was like, no, 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 that's not how you make it. That's not how you make it. I'm not going to make it less spicy. So she's definitely very, very, very stubborn in those ways, which is pretty funny. Because even her husband was like, maybe sometimes, not all the time, maybe just sometimes make it less spicy with less seeds. And she's like, nah, no. That's how I make it.
Well, it sounds like you've got an ally if you ever want to make it your way too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, just secretly, like, don't let my mom see you eating this.
I love that. Well, you're just adding another chapter to the history of this recipe.
Yeah. Aww, that's true.
And not the last.
True, true. Yeah, definitely. We'll see how it transforms over time. And I'm happy to have been able to share at least my version of the recipe and see other people making it at home and, you know, doing it their own way, adding more spice or not, or just having it like live on in that way is really special.
Hey, it's Kristen. If you are enjoying learning from Andrea as much as I did, head over to the Genius Recipe Tapes and hit subscribe so you don't miss out on other stories like this one. And like my recent conversation with Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table and editor-in-chief of Clarkson Potter, about how he came to terms with eggplant after some fraught beginnings, and how he shapes the books that so many of us cook from. In the second half of this episode, we get to hear more from Andrea about what it's like to write about Mexican food history and culture as a vegan, plus one more special surprise from her. Meet you back here for that. In addition to writing about like sort of the culinary history of your family, you've written a lot about other culinary traditions in Mexico. Is there anything that you have learned about lately that's particularly resonated with you?
Oh man. Well, I just wrote like a huge piece for Epicurious on Nixtamal. Mm-hmm. And that was like a dream assignment, because it was a ton of researching and interviewing and talking to people and looking into this process that's really central to our cooking and to our food. Because I mean, the tortilla, for example, is essential in the kitchen. So learning about what makes a tortilla is the nixtamal process. And kind of learning about how even like maize, for example, it wasn't something that kind of just sprouted out of the ground. It was something that took thousands and thousands of years to cultivate. What was it that made them think, oh, let me add some ash, you know, as an alkaline and boil it with water in this like clay pot and then like boil that with the maize. And that's how we're going to make masa. People still don't have an answer as to what was it, like the catalyst that made them think like, oh, this is what we need to do in order to make it something that's not only like edible, but like way more nutritious. And then after that, just the process of like grinding it down. And like, then like from there, like forming all these different types of shapes. That was a lot of fun for me.
And in all of Andrea's work, she is writing about it through a vegan lens. But while that could seem like a challenge in an often meat-heavy cuisine, it's the opposite.
Being part of this culture and being vegan, oftentimes it's seen as like, oh no, well that's like a white thing, like you kind of like Mexican people eat meat and like that's our culture, and like it's kind of like, well, not necessarily, like there, like so much of our cuisine is vegetable based, and I mean, what makes it Mexican is the influence of the Spanish colonizing, but it's not the only part of our cuisine that exists. Like, it's not just meat and, you know, like beef and pork and all this. Like, there's so many like indigenous dishes that were around a long time before that were very heavily vegetable based. And there's so many dishes even now that are so easily able to be made without meat and without dairy and stuff. So it's been kind of cool to be able to dispel those things and kind of like question, well, what does it mean to be vegan and to be Mexican? And kind of like at once kind of feeling like a little bit on the outskirts, like looking in. It's definitely been like a process of a lot of growth and understanding kind of like what it means, what that means to me, what it means to other people, like how much our culture really is important for us and for our well-being to kind of keep that intact, especially not living in your home country. Why it's so important for people who just decide to not eat meat for whatever reason, or dairy or whatever, to still be able to partake in those like very important traditions. And just the fact that it like, it just makes you feel like you belong somewhere, especially not being in Mexico and being here and just kind of feeling like ni de aquí ni de allá, they say, like not from here nor there. So kind of like it's like those traditions that kind of like anchor you somewhere. Being vegan now and seeing my traditions through that lens has like really helped me understand why those traditions are so important for people, why people hold on to their cultures so fervently, I guess. And it really is like a life source, or it really is like just gives you a sense of belonging. And because I grew up in a border town, so I kind of like always took my culture for granted because it was always there. And so I could just go to the fruteria and I could have my juices and my tortas and kind of take part in my culture that way. Or we could just cross the border and go get tacos and take part in my culture that way. And or even hearing Spanish as a language, and things like that, but just kind of realizing why people really honor like their recipes when they have to leave home and move somewhere else, and kind of like how important and how present food is like as a medium to kind of connect with that part of yourself. I wrote this piece during the pandemic, and I was living in New York at the time. I was just like really feeling nostalgic and kind of just like really missing Mexico and like its flavors and like just being there and the feeling that I have one has when you know you go back home or you're in your home country and you kind of feel like a sense of belonging, but also just like it's the flavors and the smells and the sounds, just kind of it's all like very familiar, and it kind of just I feel like a little more animated or something, like more colorful. So I think it was kind of like missing that. And so that's what this piece is about. It's called Ode to Mexico.
Cierro los ojos y me veo sentada en la entrada de un catedral. El aire pleno y lleno, un paraíso para el olfato. Arrullando flores de alcatraz en mis brazos, un cafecito para echarle ojo a la poesía de la bugambilia frente a la casa del don Gael García Márquez, que en paz descanse. Mastico mi corazón escurriendo de salsa amor como si fuera torta y me chupo los dedos de lo delicioso que está. En los Estados Unidos no saben cocinar así.
Thank you, that was really beautiful. Thanks for listening. Our show is put together by Coral Lee, Amy Schuster, and Emily Hanhan. If you have a genius recipe with a surprising history in your own family, I would always love to hear from you at genius@food52.com. And if you like the Genius Recipe Tapes and the Food 52 Podcast Network and you want to help us keep making it better and better, the very best thing you can do to support us is to take a moment to leave us a rating or a review. Or tell a friend who you think would love rabbit-holing into the stories behind recipes as much as you do, and I do, if you haven't already. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.